Firstly, I want to thank Paul for asking me. I was coming here for 2 weeks to poem here and there, and it wasn't half as daunting as tonight, because I think when you're asked to be a guest poet, it's more or less an exposition of the self, I think, because I have to go through my stuff and go back down through the years and find poems from out of the cobwebs and all kinds of places. Anyway, it's pretty much linear what I'm going through, and like I said, a little bit autobiographical, I suppose. So I'll begin anyway with one from my political archive. This one actually is not a poem as such. I call it Helen's Diatribe, and it's the longest piece I have, so bear with me for this one, and once you get over this, then be fine, because you get all the anger out of this. It's entitled The State We Are In, and I wrote it in 2005 when I came back from England, and I was looking for work and looking for a place to live, looking for life back in my own country, which I couldn't find. And I didn't know why I couldn't find it, because we were in the world's Celtic Tiger, but anyway, here we go. The state that we are in. Why can we not see? Mother Ireland hang her head in shame, as Irish silence continues to swim in shameful denial of injustice towards every shore. What is this nation supplied with rose-tinted glasses by media and state? Who was it created fictitious gaps in the labour market in order to open immigrant floodgates through which thousands of naive, non-people are ushered, only to be silently satisfied with illegally low wages, Dickensian working conditions, enforced long hours and no rights, to be ultimately tagged white niggers? By whom? You well might ask. Well, the disenfranchised Irish youth, perhaps, who appear to have metamorphosized into Hitler's new youth overnight. And why? Because it has now become clear to them that the education given them so freely, yet blighted by Catholicism, must be taken elsewhere to be appreciated. That is, unless they wish to answer the call centre vocation. Those who slip through the Gaelic education net are obliged to keep alive the traditional do-to, except, of course, when they play their national part in dodgy statistics by switching to sick banter. How sick? Well, today, these hoodie-clad outcasts have become modern-day black and tans. These victims of at least a fashion faux pas can look forward to having English invented elbows slapped on them if they dare to rebel or act for what rights they should be their own. What rights? The right to be recognised as Irish citizens, having preference over foreigners to education and jobs. A right not to be one of four Irish children who live in poverty. A right not to be mentally or sexually abused by those in power. A right not to be stepped over on Dublin Street and dying. A right not to be isolated from society, which places inordinate emphasis on conformity and success. A right to have a skate park in their native Cork. A right to discover and nurture a culture which they can claim forever as their own. A right to keep a culture rightly their own. To preserve the seat of Ireland's lost monarchy, to leave Tara alone. Culture! The sad cry of Cork 2005 was, where is the culture? Failure by the lead, a rating somewhere between a damp squib and disaster, said the Tribune. And all that the Cork condition represents is not even questioned by its own citizens. A city cannot suddenly invent its culture. A city's culture is surely the soul of that town. This soul must be nourished by community spirit, not soured by the grudgery and nepotism. Integration of ethnic, artistic and local folk should colour this imagination. Imagination. missing somewhere between the Shannon Bridge and Tivoli. Perhaps it's joined during the county's mad lady and gone down swimming past the Opera House into Philistine waters. It has to be a collective ignorance that allows this government to enforce collective deception on a people who think that all is progressive when clearly it is the opposite. Why do we put such blind faith in those fat cats to play all the centralised economy cards under the proverbial table in our Protestant capital, Dublin? That place where the elusive Celtic tiger hangs out, following stags and hens who stagger through Temple Bar, vomiting on the joyous trails of 21st century honesty. Observe them if you can, swishing his tail nonchalantly as fellow political felines, while he cracks on the rest of the country. And finally, why? Why should we tolerate a systematic maladministration, be it that of church or state? The epiphany comes surely in the wake of the Burns report and the endless tribunals. We must find our voice and use it. So wake up, people, open your nation's eyes to the impending demise of an idealized modern Ireland. We're on a lighter note. I wrote this poem in 1996 for my youngest son when he was 10. And he had a major punch on for at an early age for kicking ball of all stuff. And it was entitled Breakfast with a Hairy Ball. While sucking on my marmalade and sipping black tea, there from the corner of my eye, under the table, I see. Half bald, half dead, a dirty ball, yucky, staring, waving, watching me. All worn and black, with patches hanging off, sitting, not breathing, lolling, seething, hoping for kick-off. So my toes I abandon and make squeezy face, finished with eating, get out of my space. You silly old thing, useless and round, waiting for the boy from schoolyard to abound. Reach out in his gear and bounce to his sleeve, to simulate hero, one kick sets you free. You roll in the grass and are slave to his aim, dodge smelly lumpy bits for the sake of the game. You get stuck in long briars with skin peeling off, happiness for hours, hair falling out. You land, he kicks. You bounce, he shouts. They score, you roll. Oh look, the pulse. Let's go try again, you silently say. Come on, come on. Kick with that boot. Give me life this fine day. I live for a goal, you work for free. A great soccer team, small boy and me. So I capture two fingers which are revolting around paint, and straight through the back door like golden flame. I continue with breakfast and wonder at it all, how for one little boy all happiness can be is once horrible to see hairy or bald. So I might have said earlier, if you want to ask me any questions, feel free. Stop me anywhere and ask me questions to it. Okay, so moving on, that was for my younger son, he was 10 at the time. And the next one is for both my younger son and my older son, who went on to play rugby. And both of them have been capped for Ireland under 18 and 19. Brendan, the older one, went on to play with Brian O'Driscoll and the Bod, as they call him, and well, Springer and Springer, and Donald O'Callaghan is another guy he played with. He won the World Cup medal in 1998 under 19. So, this is for Brendan and the kicker. He emerged from the pack of Neanderthal bodies, zoning in on a point pre-selected by his buddies. A leaf stack. I noticed him taking in the midst of chaos, stampeding towards them, a collective thinking. Penalty for us. He must be a leader, one can see by his stance. Gracefully moves towards the oval ball feeder. He doesn't relent. What is this anger in the only fresh face one? Angelity, breathing silence, anticipation, danger, he faces the sun. Delicately, the leg he rises, runs towards target. It's over. No surprises. Applause! A rugby gladiator, brave and elegant, a class of agitator, a leader of men. Smiles in the aftermath, a true gent, mine for ten. Okay, so we're on the last child, so we're with the period of child rearing. This is for my daughter, Elaine, who went to study ballet in Manchester in the Northern Ballet School. And she suffered a lot there at the time because between bleeding toes and working bar and lack of money. And loads of stuff happened to her there, and getting lost in the taxis and all kinds of stuff. And anyway, I wrote this for her. It's Mancunian Red, and I wrote it in 2010. Subtle or mild, neither worthy this description of landscape or people. North American had Indian red, Manchester had red, red, red. Houses, halls, walls, churches, steeples. Bulls and Man City fans unite in rage when they see it. Brick after brick, building after building, it goes on. Town Hall sees Prince Albert, on Red Throne he does sit, on Oxford Road red brick strong. Trams rattle by, but still they gaze, up high, down low, left and right, a sandstone maze, a football craze. Day and night, the colour of passion, the colour of fear, the rain dilutes to dull brown. Sunshine draws us nearer though, down, down. Permeating consciousness until the soul is led. Industrialized generation, angry looking seriousness. Manchester in my head. Notably, the dance house blocked it out. Shadow windows, protecting talent. Graceful souls slip and float. Unaffected, classical, valiant. Calling brown skin from afar, perhaps led by a contrasting star. Seeking fortune in corner shop. Work, work, work to drop. On happy Mondays though, stone roses grow in a musical oasis, filling brick pot gaps in easy spaces. Nice place, for a colonial pit. Open season here, they never miss. I'm moving into my existential phase here. Poem number 5, the one which I don't know. This one was inspired by a Jean-Paul Sartre quotation. We are alone without excuses, condemned to be free. I wrote this in 2007. Look within that golden frame, just an aesthetic receptacle for bygone youth. Soft face, baby hairs blonde, gathered, waiting for innocent escape through adulthood. It encloses pain of long ago, will have to move. Family gone. That home needs no memorabilia for the purpose of enclosing, confining life to a tiny pond where sadness and uncertainty curve smiles the other way around. It's making me brown, knock it down. House gone. Smell those heavy plastics, speckled wood-like, stained with cocktail of dust, coffee, time and wine. Following, pulling you behind. We'll cognize fresh air of words next time. Stop dragging you back. Book's gone. Here's a collar of banknotes, lurking, luring, plastic pins for the release link, providing purse power and materialistic change. For society of integration and green vaccination, it's only causing me pain. Give it all away, bank account gone. Grow old with all the learning, a lesson too late. Die of education debt, literature, language, philosophy, life. Needing to be equipped for CV distribution and rejection from intellect lower who cling to order and claw at hope of retirement plan. Don't call me, I call you. Job gone. Cry on soaked pillow and yet another physical joy, civil sports fiasco. Uncorking, unleashing, marking a freedom path to nowhere. Only a toy, release the boy, love them.
My senses though, this place seems to grow. Is it a mountain pass? Tall peaks rise above me. Underfoot a mountain of flowery grass. Upon my senses. Have I really come down all that way in such a short time? A place. The world of men, where once I was, and doubt and wonder if I should ever return again. And on that, having seemed one lightly, only, should I turn back and go down? Children happy? Do I want to live? I want to carry on, to be a man, to be a woman again once more. Which path do I explore?
The world is one day distant.
Who's there? Are you an angel?
Never mind, there's no need to know.
I've been sent to the world to find my way. Can you help me?
You want life?
Have you not listened to us? I'm a vessel of love exploding. I can hold no more. What wonder if I want to share my story, although my memories of this earth are kind. Sometimes I've been ordered to forget, and often with a strangely puzzled mind. I fear that man has not made the world fair.
What do you mean?
I'm not at liberty to say.
You need guidance, don't you? You need guidance.
I can proffer one example if you help me.
Go on then.
Think of a letter.
A letter like ABC?
Look, my mind is full.
G.
Genius, friend? Genius. Can only prosper in an atmosphere of freedom. Those with the gift of affliction suffer on, are less capable of society. To grow, fear of growing, grasp on, forming their own character as they are, skulls with me. if they do not explore society's suffering, not the answer of the blangelic.
The what?
I'm not a good person.
Look, you need guidance. I said it before. I can't help you. Look, come here. Look. Here. You can have to glimpse the place to be. Here. You'll see. I can see that some people are afraid. I do know. Can you see? The way. But I do not fear it anymore. The fear of hurt. I've gotten over that. But
are you afraid?
I can see more. I can see a lot more now that I. It's happening. I can count more stars than I can see.
And especially after a few points. Yeah?
Thanks to me, I didn't say who was in the next book from Hoodwinked. That's the next play in Turkey, Ukraine, and in the movie. Okay, let me do this. Well, dodgy. Well, dodgy. Now, the next one is self-explanatory, and it's very short book. My mother is a rebel. She smiles in the face of adversity, scornfully laughs at conformity. She defies the process of age, speaks with the tone of a sage, walking elegantly on life's path, ahead of her time, in her prime. She got to dance just one last time, then abruptly taken. The ultimate rogue from Shirley Rogue, my mother. I'm dipping into my extensions collection once more for another short poem. And I wrote this one literally an hour before I left to go to the airport for Edinburgh when I did my play Judas. And I had the bag packed. And everybody had left the house and I was the only one left. And I wrote this with my coat on me, I think it was maybe in 2002. It's entitled Positive Active Anguish. Gone. Now there's none. Gone. Voices. None. TV off. Smiles. Gone. Child. Gone. First one. Gone. Then two. Son. Gone. Daughter over there, gone. Times Square and the red there. Small boy too, gone. Licking, licking, doggy stare. Licking, staring, silence. All grown up, three. Listen, a child cries alone. A mother can never be free. It's me. We're moving quickly on to the production of Judas in 2002 in Edinburgh, and I'd now like to introduce you to the man who created Judas. For 22 nights in a row, this man became Judas, and he's here tonight and he's going to do a part from Ty Hickey. probing, researching, asking, motherless, fatherless, alone in my plight, why? The Oxford out of bounds, forced to live within horror movie, I ride the roller coaster underground. First a lumpectomy, then the neurectomy, taken on roof with 20 small glands, the pain and dirt, sadness profound. So why not take the rest of me? Mortality presented itself, stood right before me, punctually awaiting, visiting hour at the door of my consciousness. Having morphed into entity and peering through the gate, charged me for dancing on life's precious fragility, never again would I be trusted to take control of my own personal fate. Mother visited sickbed too, sauntered in with monstrous hand in hand, a giggling pair, bearing grapes of apathy, sour and sweet. They lingered for a while, only to dissipate, hadn't seen her on earth this past month or two. So entered again with her consubstantial mate. This time, she sat to fix my hair. An argument of diffidence questions this fight. Only Bacchus remains in friends to clear flight. Effectively amazing, how ignominious folk step away from the mark when confronted with big feet. Now tattooed with Dr. Blue, I'm like a bomb. Now tattooed with Dr. Blue, as occasionally I take on my duty and succumb daily the dose of the radiotherapy, measured and placed with total precision, while staff take exit. I breathe, isolated, silent, in the lingerie tomb, ready for zapping. Well, carcinoma crept out like a wounded wild cat that will always inhabit that place where at waiting is dream. Now vigilance takes precedence, and that faceless choked incubus need not visit me, for fear I pin it to the wall with the force of my well-rehearsed primal scream. Okay, so I'm on the last one, this is my pièce de résistance. Who's laughing, George? I brought visual to this one. And it's entitled Genocide Jane. Here?
Who is she? Mary Horney.
Sorry, no, I wouldn't have to walk with this thing.
Mary Horney.
This is a better idea, Paul. Yeah. I should move around. Genocide Jane. Mary Horney. I'll come back to you. Anyway, I'm doing it then. Pardon? Alright, okay. This one, anyway, here we go. I wrote this one last week, especially for women. Genocide. Conducting Napoleon-esque like stairs. As from Animal's Farm, she sits on her fat throne as Bertie Wright. Our stuttering jester of a leader with barely an articulate drawl whispers sweet figures in piggy's ears. Or pay hikes in the door.
Oh.
Cold-bloodedly, and it ain't funny, they have the last call. Bertie, you're killing us, say banners in Ennis. Thousands take to our streets. Hey, Mary Minister of Trolleys and Cutbacks, multitudes are dying at your crudely, your feet. With your two-tier health system, which by the way goes well with your chin, your private sector is scoring, families are mourning, corruption from within, Ireland becomes third world yet again. You have betrayed your own sex, let down your own country, women and children suffer the most. You should be let rot, fine lady, with dopey Bertie, and be forever haunted by your own ghost. For how stupid a nation to suffer this long, reinstating a Hearn and Harney, did Orwellian ping and pong this morning. Their pay packets are rising right up to the sky, like a wall of remembrance etched with names so high, of young women dead without any breath. Paid more than George Bush for Bertie's corruption of the Dáil, when he served his apprenticeship under the sneakiest of them all, the roguish Charles Gates, who slithered his way through the land of Fianna Fáil. But the Fianna Dipper, who gives a sacrificial lamb, is obviously last call for democracy in Éire, if the proletariat lead themselves to slaughter. So shoot the very tiger, get rid of them now. Don't allow our country be run by a despot and his sow. He's thrown bumbling Bertie and his genocide jays, laid them bare on Justice Square, forever as a reminder that Ireland eventually fought to save her fully breasted daughters. Considering it's my night, I just one tiny more poem that I just got to love and then it's untitled. I have discovered all aspects of life contained in many salubrious wine-soaked hours spent with him, experiencing a vibrancy, a spring from each shining curve, a spirit curled with exorbitant expectation, swirling in eyes as rose blue, glowing despite blinding personalities. To hear him sing with a raspy pleasure of love and life's displeasure, embracing notes and shagging chords, much like an excited lover lunges toward musical climax, he embraces life. My shining star.